The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Thank you, Ryoshin, and thank you, Jisei. Good morning. My name's Bokshu. It's good to see you. I had this vague fantasy that maybe we would all be sitting in a room together this time, but not quite yet. Timing is everything. In fact, tomorrow, our community will finally gather together physically in one place, those who can and choose to do so. And I'm really quite excited about that. I'm really looking forward to getting back to a different kind of practice than it's been feeling like. And since I spoke with you last March, this past March, things have changed a lot in New York City, at least. Cases and deaths are way down. And streets, parks, restaurants, and even bars are full of people. And I don't know about you, but I don't see many masks on the street anymore. Even in stores, people seem to have stopped wearing masks. And all of these things are really good, even though the pandemic rages elsewhere, and we cannot forget that billions of people haven't been vaccinated, and tremendous amounts of people are having severe illness and dying from the pandemic still from COVID. This thing is far from over. And although things are better in New York City than in many places, I'm having a lot of problems with that. I can't quite grasp that this has changed so much so quickly here. And I'm feeling lost. It's great, everything's great, but I feel lost, disoriented, confused. I really can't figure out how to deal with all this change so quickly. I mean, we were the way we were before it all happened, then suddenly everything changed last March, and now suddenly everything's changing again. And to my surprise, it's too much. So I'm not feeling it. And I want to just give a shout out to anyone out there who isn't feeling it, and encourage anyone out there who isn't feeling it to feel not feeling it fully, and to be really comfortable in your skin if you're not feeling it. If you don't know what to do, if you can't handle it, really feel that, not feeling it. Because these signals are really important. I find these transitional moments to be absolutely critical for providing information that I can't get any other way. Seems like every time one of these big transitions comes up for me, you know, pandemic comes in, pandemic goes out, job loss, relationship loss, these moments really trigger a tremendous feeling of inadequacy, which I've lived with all my life. I just get into this headspace of, am I good enough? Am I doing enough? Is this okay? Am I okay? And it's really painful, and it's really very fertile, very useful stuff to go through that. So if you're going through anything like that now, make the most of it, because it's a precious opportunity to look at our patterns, to look at our habits, and understand that there's nothing there. This is, you know, this story about, well, I'm not good enough, or I should be doing X, Y, and Z, is just made up. And if we can see that and cut the legs off of those stories, we'll really be doing ourselves a tremendous favor, and also a tremendous favor to those around us, because I don't know about you, but more often than not, I'm just exporting my own pain. You know, I use other people in my worst moments. I use other people to export what I can't handle in myself. And that, of course, just adds to the pain. As to my pain, although it has a sort of sugar high effect, then of course it adds to the pain of the other person. This project of building up and protecting Bokshu, defending and justifying Bokshu, do you have your version of that project? How's that going for you? How's it going building up and protecting something that doesn't even exist? And I don't, of course, I don't mean this thing that's talking to you doesn't exist. I mean, the idea of this thing that I'm so busy protecting is it doesn't exist. To the extent that any of you know me out there, each of you has a completely different vision, a completely different set of recollections and experiences. How can something as shape-shifting and variable as that exist? It's obvious it doesn't. And if it doesn't exist, it doesn't need to be defended. It doesn't need to be protected. It doesn't need to be built up. What is actually called for is a kind of demolition, a very gentle demolition derby. Have you ever seen a demolition derby? I was watching some of these on YouTube the other day. I've never been to one. But they build these crazy vehicles and then they crash them into each other. The whole point is just to crash them. And people are really, you know, some people are really into this. They compile these highlights, which are the best crashes. And I really feel like I need to go out and find one of these and see it for myself, because it's really what I believe we're up to here. This is the Zen demolition derby. And we're crashing into ourselves. And the reason that we're doing it is that that is the root of suffering. And this whole thing is about eliminating suffering. That's why we're here. That's the name of the demolition. To end suffering. Of course, we're never going to do it, but if we can just turn the dial a little bit, it has a tremendous impact on our lives and on the lives of everyone we come into contact with. And in this practice, we don't just turn the dial, we can add dials to the machine. Ways to work with ourselves, not to, as I would like to think of it, control ourselves. And we'll get into control in a moment, but to, you know, be a DJ kind of thing with yourself, Turn up the volume, turn up the bass. See what that does for you. Change your tune. But, and with me, there's always, as someone said in group therapy once, with me, there is always a but. We don't just wake up and say, well, today I'm not going to suffer. That's all over with. It doesn't work that way. We need a method for this gradual, gentle demolition. And that method is, of course, what we're doing. So what I'd like to do is give you a practical application of that method, just for the hell of it. I've lived in the space that I'm speaking to you from for about 35 years, which by some strange coincidence is about as long as the Village Zendo has existed, if I'm not mistaken. It's about 35 years. So around the time the Village Zendo was created, I moved in here, no idea that Village Zendo was 15 minutes away by foot. But it was in the air. And so 35 years later, what I'm dealing with is the building next door is going to be demolished. And I don't want to live next to that. So when I found out that this was coming down, literally, I went into a mad scramble to get the hell out of here. And, you know, I rented cars and drove to the hinterlands and no offense, but, you know, out there where I don't normally go, I'm kind of a below 14th Street guy. And there I was going to the edge of New Jersey and I was going up to Catskill and all sorts of places looking at buildings and trying to find a home. And the trouble was that everyone else in New York City seems to be doing the same thing, although for them, it's a remote work thing, not a demolition thing. But the effect is the same. There's no places to be gotten. I mean, it's like a frenzy, a real estate frenzy. So it didn't work out. And after all of the running around, I just had to stay here. And it began. They started taking the roof off of the building next door, which, by the way, was comprised of various components, including asbestos. So here I was stuck in my apartment, and right below there were these guys in hazmat suits and respirators jackhammering asbestos-laden roof membrane off the building next door. And every morning I have a little routine. I run into the bedroom and use my dresser as a standing desk and have my breakfast there and read the news with the door closed. So the point of all this is I had to deal with it. Ultimately, I couldn't get away from the demolition. I was stuck, trapped. And I had to find a way to relate to it. And so this is really the method I want to point to, is that we're not about eliminating things. The demolition is very subtle and not necessarily what we think of it as being. And part of it is learning to relate to things that we think we can't tolerate. And isn't that what we're doing on the cushion a lot of the time? Stuff's coming up and we're looking at it and we're saying to ourselves, my God, what the hell is wrong with me? What is this coming up in my head? I'm supposed to be blissing out. I'm supposed to be thinking of nothing. And look at what's coming up. And so, of course, we have to drop that because that only makes it worse. That kind of thinking about what we're thinking about. But really what we're doing under it all is we're learning to relate to it. And we're learning to deal with what we've got going on in our heads and learning that it really isn't such a trauma after all. That maybe we really are okay. You know, there's this expression that always comes up in Zen places, you're perfect and complete just as you are. The first time I heard that, I was like, what the hell is that? What? You know, it's like embroider that on a pillow and then give it to the goodwill. But if you put it in plain language, we can learn to deal with ourselves. And by the way, that doesn't just mean this. That means this. Because we're in it together. And we need each other. I mean, hasn't this year proven that we need each other? It's unbelievable that we had to go through that. If you doubted it before, I don't think you doubt it now. So it's a lesson learned, huh? So I'm kind of meandering here, but I wanted to offer you some quotes, you know, about this whole demolition thing. This feeling of being overwhelmed by what's coming at us so quickly, so much change, is really not that different from what you might feel on the cushion, feeling a certain amount of being overwhelmed by what's coming into you from yourself. And there's this quote that Dogen gives in his fascicle, Only a Buddha and a Buddha, which is an incredible title. Only a Buddha and a Buddha. And the quote is, long ago a monk asked a master, when hundreds, thousands, or myriads of objects come all at once, what should be done? The master replied, don't try to control them. And then we have something very similar in Suzuki Roshi's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, where he writes, to give your sheep or cow a large, spacious meadow is the way to control him. So it is with people. Let them do what they want and watch them. Let them do what they want and watch them. Well, that's what we're doing, right? We sit on the cushion and our minds do what they want. I've always found it the most humbling and enlightening aspect of sitting, just how little control I have over my mind. It's really shocking. Every time I sit, I'm shocked at that. And there's an effect, that shock has value. You know that expression, shock value? That is real shock value. How do we observe our fear, our need for control, our agitation, our insecurity, our feelings of inadequacy? How do we control them? Well, we don't. Krishnamurti had this to say about watching the sheep or cow on a large, spacious meadow. He said, to observe without evaluating is the highest form of intelligence. And I think it's really a very valid point. I mean, how often do we look at something without adding on an opinion, a judgment, an evaluation, a comparison? Just, you know, as you go through your day-to-day, today, the longest Sunday of the year, you've got plenty of time today, just at a moment of your choosing, look at something and see if you can just look at it without having an opinion about it. I guarantee you, it's a hell of a challenge. I think I'm going to do that every day, just like make time to look at an object. And try to actually observe as opposed to think. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I did come to this practice with an idea that I could change myself. Obviously, embedded in this idea that I have all these problems is the idea that they can somehow be fixed. They can be corrected. Maybe that's true, but if, you know, I love to say to myself, not that I listen, I never listen to this, but if I'm so flawed, how would I know what an improvement would be? How could I possibly measure with my flawed perceptions what would be better? It's obvious I can't. So I hope there's nobody out there that's as dumb as I am, thinking that this is about self-improvement. We're changing all the time. And the idea that we know how to direct that change, that we know what the best kind of change looks like, that we've got the answers, somehow, although we don't really know what we're doing, we've got all the answers, and if we just do it right, it'll be great. It's insane. So I think you're probably all much too smart to have that deluded notion, but just mentioning it just in case you're like me. I also don't want to leave you with the impression that just observe without evaluating means to be sort of a lobotomized person, you know, just sitting there looking into space with, you know, drool running out of your mouth. You're not doing anything. It's not a passive do-nothing state. When you need to take an action, you will take an action. You will know. Because in you is all that you need. You will know that you need to take an action. So for example, next door, when I saw the guys, you know, they cut the roof off and they put it in bags. And that's how they got it out of here. But they had the brilliant idea that they'd throw the bags down from one or two stories into a bin. And remember, this is, you know, membrane with asbestos in it. So you probably don't want to be throwing asbestos around, is my thinking. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not trained in asbestos removal. But when I saw that, I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. So I called the company and reported it. I said, your guys are throwing this stuff around. I don't think it's a good idea. And I didn't like sit there and say, whoa, am I a good person or am I a bad person? I was like, this doesn't look right. I better make a call. But then later, you know, it was really hot, 90 degrees out there, and they were not all wearing their respirators. And that is a problem. But I didn't report it because that's their decision. That's up to them. If they've decided it's okay to be exposed to that stuff because it's too hot or whatever the problem is, it's none of my business. So what we're developing is discernment. The discernment to understand that we know when to act and that we are not passive just because we understand we don't know. We understand we don't know, but we can act and we will act. It's a very subtle, alive place to be, where our ideas are not fixed, where we're relating to what's going on instead of opposing it or embracing it. We're relating to how we experience ourselves in each moment. And that is what we're learning here. It is immensely valuable. But I don't want to commit some kind of error and tell you that there's a reason to do Zazen. I want to read Kodo Suwaki. He says, you have to forget any results of your effort. Result-oriented practice is merely an enterprise, a business. Monks say that they have no time to do Zazen. I always say Zazen is an activity that comes to nothing. There is nothing more admirable than this activity that comes to nothing. To do something with a goal is really worthless. And there's a strange echo of Suwaki's language in the 19th century French poet Théophile Gautier, who said, only that which serves no end is beautiful. Everything useful is ugly. And then we have Joshu, who 1100 years before Suwaki said, a good thing isn't as good a thing as nothing. So what is this nothing that they're talking about? What is Joshu's nothing? Is it this? Is it the idea of this? Is it the idea that this does not exist? All of the above? None of the above? Is nothing the absence of a person? The absence of any ideas about a person? There are no answers. That's what's beautiful about it. That's what's terrifying about it. That's the demolition that we're engaged in, is to stop looking for answers, to stop looking for a solution to the pain that we may be feeling. And especially to stop doing another thing I do, which is to say, well, I shouldn't be feeling this because after all, in India, they're still dying of COVID. Which is perfectly true and perfectly valid, but it doesn't do a damn bit of good. So I really encourage you on this longest Sunday of the year to relish nothing, to believe in nothing, to enjoy nothing, and to be nothing. Thank you.